This episode is brought to you by HVR. Fresh data where you need it. More on that in a bit, but first, on with the show. Welcome to Deep Dive, a show where we discuss the biggest headlines to hit the startup scene with the journalists who broke the stories. My name's Nat, and today we're going to talk about Southeast Asian ride-hailing, delivery, payments, and all-around super app, Grab. Last month, the company announced that it was going public in the US through a special purpose acquisition company, or a SPAC. Shortly after, it unveiled an investor presentation revealing what were previously closely guarded financial details. My colleague, Tech in Asia industry analyst Simon Huang, joins me for this story.
So I guess before we get right into it, we're going to be talking about Grab's investor presentation that recently came out, I guess, when it announced its IPO. But before we get into that, could we maybe talk about what led to this moment? You know, for anyone who might be living under a rock, what exactly Grab is and what it's been up to up until last month?
Yeah, sure. So Grab, they have a ride-hailing business. They also have a food delivery business. So for our US listeners, you would be familiar with DoorDash or Uber Eats. And they also have a budding financial services business. And all of this is available on one app. So Grab has a strategy that it intends to become Asia's super app, where you can access different services and products from one app. This is something that's been done in China as well with Tencent's WeChat. And it's a model that Grab is looking to emulate.
Right, right. So I guess talk me through what exactly led Grab to consider this public listing that's been the topic of the past couple of months.
So one of the factors behind this is that there has been increasing investor attention on Southeast Asia as a market.
I think Grab could be very interesting because, wow, it's like it's an Asian Uber.
But previously that has been demonstrated in the very, in the amazing performance of Sea, which is listed in the US and is in e-commerce, gaming, and financial services in Southeast Asia as well. If you look at C share price, especially over last year, it had a really great market-beating performance. And so I think Grab is looking to take advantage of that. Grab also has certain agreements. So when Grab bought over Uber's business in Southeast Asia, in exchange for the business, it gave Uber shares in Grab. There's a term in that agreement that obliges Grab to list, if I'm not wrong, by 2023. And if they don't do so, they actually have to make a payment to Uber. So at some point, Grab was probably going to have to list partly because of that. And the third reason is that if you look at why companies list, they do it to raise money. When you IPO, or when you go public, most companies will raise funds from that process. And once you're a listed entity, it's also a lot easier to raise money quickly, which is something that Sea did last year. And I think Grab is gearing up for the next stage of its battle for dominance in Southeast Asia. And to do that, it helps to have the cash. It helps to already be listed so that it can raise cash quickly.
Right. So this particular presentation that's the topic of today's episode, let's talk about that, I guess.
So this was released in, mid-April. And we had our eyes on it the night it was released. On the very same day, we had a look at the numbers and we got the article out, I think, 2 days later. So that was a mad rush to put together, but was a rewarding experience in the end. And why it's so important is because previously Grab has been fairly secretive about a lot of their numbers. So you'd see statements here and there hinting, for example, about what their revenues are, but we didn't really know. And so now when this investor presentation came out, apart from talking us through a bit on Grab's strategy, it also had numbers which we've never seen before. So metrics like gross merchandise value, revenue, EBITDA, and broken down by segment, not just for 2018 to 2020, but also projecting up to 2023. So it was the first time we really got a look under the hood of Grab and were able to see some of their numbers. So that's also why it was so important.
Right, right. So when this investor deck came out, what was the, I guess, reaction, the general reaction from among the industry when, you know, these numbers that were secret for over the past few years, when it was made public, what was the general reaction of the landscape, I guess?
Yeah. So just to be clear, when this presentation was released, the target audience is actually potential investors who would invest in the SPAC, which is the process that Grab has chosen to go public. And so it was meant to really publicize it and get the word out that Grab is going public by a SPAC. And here, have a look at some of our numbers.
Right.
The reaction was big, right? And I think the reason for that is that Grab is actually the biggest Southeast Asia tech company to go public. The valuation for Grab from an equity perspective is actually $40 billion.
Just under $40 billion. It's going public via SPAC with Altima.
This will also be the largest U.S. listing by a Southeast Asian firm. The
agreement fee right now is worth like three times that much. It's worth $120 billion. But let's not forget that back in 2017, when C actually IPO'd, it was only valued at $4 billion. So Grab is coming to the market at 10 times the valuation that C did when it came to the market in 2017. So that's a big deal. And wow. It's also a big deal because if you are familiar with the SPAC trend in the US, a lot of companies have been going public by the SPAC mechanism over the past year. And this is actually the biggest SPAC deal ever globally.
The largest SPAC deal we've seen to date, just back to the market overall.
At a very important moment in the SPAC kind of journey because
this would be the largest ever SPAC merger if it materializes.
So I think that's the other big thing. You're taking two big trends, tech and SPACs, and putting it together in one news story. So it definitely made an impact.
Right, right. And, you know, just for people who might not be so familiar with the term, could you just really quick explain SPACs, you know, special purpose acquisition companies, and I guess a little bit on why we're seeing a trend of a lot more US companies starting to take that route for a public listing?
Yeah. So a SPAC is, it's a shell company and investors put their money into the SPAC without knowing what the underlying business will be, because at the point in time where the SPAC is listed, it doesn't actually have an underlying business. So you're putting your money into it. Another term is a blank check company, because the sponsors behind the SPAC are essentially being given a blank check. What they do with that is to then use that money to purchase an existing company. When the SPAC purchases the company, because the SPAC is listed, what happens is that the target company then becomes the listed entity. So it's a way for these companies to go public as an alternative to an IPO. And I think one of the main reasons that the SPAC has been doing so well, I think one is that there's a lot of liquidity in the markets right now. And so investors are looking at different ways to get returns. And the SPAC is one way of doing that. I think, secondly, we've had a few examples of SPACs having done well. And when people see that there's this alternative that is doing well, there tends to be a bit of a piggyback effect where people will want to try to do something similar. And I think that's the other reason SPACs have managed to do well. There are other advantages as well. For example, for a SPAC, it can take half the time to go public compared to an IPO. And for the target company, there's also more certainty in terms of what the valuation will be. So I think those are some of the reasons why SPACs have become so popular.
Right. There's a degree of certainty that assures the company that's going public that it will kind of get this certain valuation.
Yes. So alternatively, when you do an IPO, there is what you call a book building process where the investment banks will prepare the company for the IPO. They'll go on a roadshow. They'll meet a lot of investors. And at the end of that process, they will get a price, a valuation for the company. So the company doesn't really know exactly how much it's going to be valued at until the end of the IPO process before it actually lists. Whereas for SPAC, if we use Grab as an example, the SPAC is agreeing to purchase Grab at an amount that values it at $40 billion. So the Grab shareholders know that they will be valued at $40 billion. So I do think there's a certainty there that is superior to the IPO process from the perspective of the current shareholders of the target company.
Right, right. Now, I guess we've cleared most of the jargon and most of the context and background information on Grab to adequately discuss this deck in question, this presentation for Grab's investors. I guess could you tell me, when you looked at it, what exactly did it say? Because it's about 31 pages long if you discount all the disclaimers. It's a pretty lengthy presentation, I guess, for anyone not actually looking to invest and just kind of wanting to know the headlines of what this whole presentation is about. So could you run me through what you found out from this deck?
Yeah, certainly. The first thing that was interesting is that Grab's delivery business, which is currently largely food delivery, but also expanding into other areas, is actually its largest segment now by revenue, which is surprising because I think in Southeast Asia, a lot of us still associate Grab with being a ride-hailing company. But now delivery is actually the largest segment. And to give you an idea, in 2018, delivery did not exist. And in 2020, it now accounts for half of total revenue for the whole business. The second interesting point for me is that, as I mentioned earlier, they do provide projections from 2020 to 2023. So Grab looks ahead and says, over the next 3 years, this is how we expect the different businesses to grow. And I've been looking at Grab's business for a while, and myself and other observers have thought that financial services would be a big deal for them going forward, and I think it is. But if you look at their projections, financial services is projected to grow by 100% from 2020 to 2023. So it's expected to double, which is really incredible growth, don't get me wrong. But compared to delivery, which is expected to grow 175%, and mobility, which is expected to grow by 220%, that growth is a lot less. And there are reasons for that that we can come to later. But I think that was slightly surprising for people that financial services growth was slower. Of course, that is from a revenue perspective. Grab also has these other figures that they use, like gross merchandise value and total payment volume for financial services. And on that metric, it's growing faster. But from a revenue perspective, they've been quite conservative with their financial services numbers. So the third finding, and these things always come in threes, the third finding is that the EBITDA margin was negative. So the company is losing money on an EBITDA basis, and the margin is negative 47%. So the fact that it's negative in itself isn't surprising. A lot of these fast-growing tech companies are yet to be profitable. But it was interesting to compare it to Uber. When Uber was preparing to go public a few years ago, its EBITDA margin was negative 18% compared to negative 47% for Grab. So they do have more to make up for in that sense from an EBITDA margin perspective.
Right. And so is that a good thing, or is that actually a little bit of a warning sign, you know, that negative EBITDA?
Yeah, I would say that it's something to watch out for. It's, as I mentioned, it's normal for tech companies to not be EBITDA positive. What investors want to see is that that loss narrows over the period. And if you look at Grab's projections as a whole, for the whole company, they do expect to go EBITDA positive in 2023. So right at the end of their projected period. But mind you, these are all projections, and so we don't know how that's going to turn out. I don't think it's negative per se, but I think it's something that investors will be concerned about, and they'll want to see a pathway to profitability.
We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by HVR, whose technology empowers organizations to realize their full potential with continuous, high-volume data movement between cloud-based and on-premise systems. HVR serves a number of top-tier companies around the world, and you could be one of them. All you have to do is head on over to techin.asia/HVR to get fresh data when you need it. That's techin.asia/HVR. Now, back to the show.
So we've kind of gone through what exactly the deck has been saying. Has there been anything that you were looking for that actually the deck didn't say? Like something that you expected to be there that just was not?
Yeah, so there were. And it's interesting that you brought up what the deck doesn't say, because the sponsor of the SPAC is a fund called Altimeter. And because the SPAC is already listed, they do have to make certain disclosures to the US authorities. And so they actually had released this presentation as well on the SEC website. And the interesting thing is that that deck that was uploaded there had more information and more slides that were not in the 35-page presentation that a lot of people have been looking at. So there were certain omissions that were interesting and that we would have expected to see in the deck. So the first was actually on the valuation. Grab is coming to market with a $40 billion valuation. And so one of the questions that people have been thinking about and that I've also written on is, how do you value Grab, right? And one of the ways you do that is by looking at comparable companies that are already listed. And in that deck, they actually stated what some of the peers to Grab were or are. So they consider their peers to be companies like DoorDash, Sea, Meituan, which is a Chinese delivery company, Mercado Libre, which is the Latin American e-commerce company, and PayPal. And so they looked at all these companies, and if I'm not wrong, off the top of my head, they said that the multiple, the EV over 2022 revenue, was an average of about 10 times. And this is in line with Grab's $40 billion valuation based on its 2022 revenue. What's significant? What was left out was that Uber wasn't actually included as one of the peers, which is surprising given that Uber is also a ride-hailing and food delivery company. And Uber actually is trading at only 5 times 2022 revenue, right? So if we were to use the Uber multiple, the Grab valuation would actually be lower. But they left Uber out as one of the peers. I don't know if it was deliberate or not, but that was quite an interesting observation. The second broad observation that was in this second more detailed deck that wasn't in the first is the cap table. So every company has a cap table which states how much, what percentage of shares the different shareholders own in the company. And if you look at that cap table, you would see that the founder of Grab, Anthony Tan, even though he owns 2.2% of Grab, expected to own 2.2% of Grab when it does go public via the SPAC, he will retain 60% of voting power. So it's common in the US for founders like Mark Zuckerberg, like Evan Spiegel or Snap, to have outsized control, because the idea is that these people are the visionaries behind the company and they should be basically left to do what they want with the company because they are the people best placed to lead the company forward. So it's common to actually have this outsized voting power. But to have 60% of voting power from 2% of shares, that is quite a big gap. And so that was another point that was interesting to note.
Right. And what does that actually mean for when Grab actually does go public? Does that have any consequences or any, I guess, unique effects on how it will operate as a public company?
Yes. So it does mean that when it comes down to certain decisions, Anthony Tan will get his way, even though his economic exposure is only 2%. But because he controls 60% of the votes, he will be able to do what he wants, basically.
Right, right. And weighing these things that have been said in the deck and the stuff that wasn't put in the deck, what, I guess, do you know about how Grab's positioning itself pre-IPO?
Yeah. So one of the other interesting things which the deck didn't say that we understand from our conversations that we've been having is that the projections in the deck for financial services actually don't include the digital bank projections. And for those of the listeners who may not be aware, Grab was actually one of the parties that was awarded the right to start a digital bank in Singapore. So that is one of the, I think, points that investors will want to watch out for, because as I mentioned earlier, financial services is not projected to grow as much as the other two businesses. But if we were to actually include the digital bank and some of the other initiatives that are at an earlier stage right now, then financial services becomes more of a wild card for Grab than what the deck may indicate.
Right, right. And this wild card information, I guess, how much weightage do they have to actually affect the performance of Grab once it becomes a public company?
Yeah, I do think that the financial services business does have the potential to really change things. Financial services in Southeast Asia is a huge opportunity. It's a huge opportunity because there's so many people in the region who are either unbanked or underbanked. And so if Grab is able to grab a good slice of that pie, then I do think that that will make a material difference to the attractiveness of the business as a whole. But the thing about financial services is that everyone can spot this opportunity, so it's also going to be really competitive. So yeah, I think that is the open question, and I do think that will have a material impact on the overall business and how the shares perform going forward. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, yeah, do you think we missed anything? Do you think there's anything more to discuss, I guess, from this Grab presentation?
No, I think we've covered it And we will be covering more of Grab going ahead, working on more analysis of the individual businesses. So the deliveries business, the ride-hailing business, the financial services, and then there's an others category. And we're going to look into each in more detail, because to really get a handle of the company, you have to get a handle of each division, each sector. So stay tuned for that. We'll be doing more on that front.
Right. Well, as always, it was a pleasure having you on the show, Simon.
Thank you for having me again, and always a pleasure being able to catch up.
For more stories on Grab or any of the other companies that make up the Asian tech and startup scene, visit techin.asia/sub and become a Tech in Asia subscriber. Either that or subscribe to this podcast, where we're running deep dives every month. But that's it for this episode. Special thanks again to Simon Huang for joining me. Let me know what you thought of today's discussion or what topics you want to see discussed on future episodes. Email me at podcast@techinasia.com or just comment wherever you're listening from. I'd love to know what you think. Till next time, my name's Nat. I'll see you in a few weeks.